blue-white game is finally over, Sam. I know we were looking forward to this so much, and it seems like Christmas has passed as we start the Penn Stated football podcast on this, I think it's the second to last week in April. Sam Freeman, Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times Tribune. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I wanted to bring up something that I just thought of. I didn't even bring this up to you in the pregame talk that we just had for about 15 seconds before we started this podcast. But I wanted to, and this happened last week, and it has nothing to do with Penn State football, but it's one of those things that really interests me because I've had always had young kids. They have kids kind of close to Sam's age now. It feels like forever I've had kids who are the age of Sam. So it's but it is a big age gap between the two. How old are you, Sam? 23?
22.
20. He's not even 23 yet. So he's 22 and I'm 47. So I lived a whole life. I was alive longer before Sam was born than Sam is. I did want to talk about this. It just fascinates me, the age gap. And I don't feel like we're like on different wavelengths on things, but I think on this one, we will be. When OJ Simpson died last week, Sam, I thought to myself, this is the one story of my lifetime that I can't explain to a younger person and have them fully grasp it. 9/11. Yeah. Y2K. Okay. We can get that. Challenger explosion. I saw it. That's ancient history to you. I don't think I could explain OJ Simpson to my son and have him understand what we went through in the 90s. And I think that's because, look, you had to be around in the 80s to know how beloved he was. And then in the 90s to know what he allegedly did and probably got away with. And I'm wondering, Sam, as somebody who grew up in the 2000s and was born long after that verdict, what was that news event like for you, his death last week? Was it just kind of another thing, another moment in time about some old guy that used to be a big deal and isn't anymore?
To some degree. I mean, I woke up and saw the news, and it was sort of out of left field because I feel like he was, I suppose. I can change the verb now. I feel like he was pretty active on Twitter randomly. So I would see stuff from OJ fairly often, just because it would pop up through other people's interactions, or just, you know, go semi-viral or whatever it may be. But yeah, I mean, I certainly didn't have any lived experience with the controversy around OJ. I don't even think when he got the armed robbery conviction, I don't think I was fully cognizant or anything like that. So, you know, largely as long as I've been alive, I've sort of associated with OJ with his alleged involvement in the in the murder, you know, and just sort of that's I have no. You know, it took me a little bit to even realize that he was such a beloved national icon. I kind of spent the first couple years of my understanding of OJ just thinking, oh, this guy's a criminal. You know, he's a former NFL player, and then he was an ostracized criminal. I didn't realize how much of a gap there was in between it. I mean, it was surprising to see, just because, you know, he's one of the few household name criminals there are. So, you know, it still, I don't want to say made an impact when he died, because, you know, I don't really have any strong personal connections to anything involving OJ, but, you know, it was, I guess it was kind of like, you know, if an old school gangster died, like when Whitey Bulger died, you know, that sort of thing, if that makes any sense.
For you, it's that makes sense to me. I that trial was every day, and I don't remember. I'm not old enough to remember OJ as a player. I've read some things. Dave Jones wrote a really good, really good column on OJ, and I didn't realize how good OJ was in his prime. Like, he was as good a player as there was in the NFL, maybe the best player in the NFL. And I knew he was a really good player, but I also knew he was kind of a marketable guy and things like that. But I remember him more as the halftime and pregame host on NBC. And he was kind of the guy you always looked forward to because he was a funny guy. And, you know, he'd always say something silly. You know, back then, I think this is kind of a story to me that couldn't happen today. Because there was no way OJ could be as evil as he was, a wife beater. let's call it what it is. And they have that covered up today. There's just no cause for it. Social media, reality television, there's just no way it would happen. But in so many ways, the work that trial, that the slow speed car chase, you weren't obviously, you didn't even mention that. And that's the first thing I think of when I think of OJ anymore, is that car chase. That happened on the last day of my junior year in high school. And we were out swimming in the pool, a bunch of friends and my brother was out there. And my mom comes out in the backyard and says, "Hey, you guys might want to come in and watch this." And there's very few moments I remember from quite in that way that shaped my life. And that one did. I think I became a journalist because of that, because that was so crazy to watch. It was so interesting. And it was really the birth of reality television. There was nothing like that ever on television, where everybody's just kind of watching something unfold in real time. And now you see it kind of all the time. I mean, there was 24-hour news stations before that, of course, but this is a time when everybody kind of looked at that and was just enthralled by it. And I think it kind of gave birth to a genre of television that, whether we like it or not, is probably the past, present, and future of television and what we watch, the OJ chase. And then the trial was absolute insanity from start to finish. And I remember a couple of years ago, it was the Rose Bowl game against USC when Penn State went out there, went out to LA. We were staying out there, and it was the first time I had a chance to kind of walk around the city, which probably was, you know, my wife's from out that way, and she told me that's a really bad idea. So I kind of took my life into my own hands without knowing it. But I walked to the one thing I wanted to see in LA at that point, not the Hollywood sign, not, you know, Hollywood and Vine, any of the Chinese theater, anything. I wanted to see the OJ courthouse, and I went and saw the OJ courthouse. And I really, if I could have, probably would have taken an Uber at that point and gone to see the sites of the crime. It was just that, and I saw the Made in America thing. I saw the 30 for 30 documentary, and it's just, to me, that's still among the most interesting stories that I've ever seen. It struck me that you probably are one of the people who would not have had any kind of interest in O.J. Simpson in any regard. And I think in the 90s, I wish I didn't either. So that's where we're at with O.J. gone at the age of 70 something, and who cares? So Sam, also gone this week, is Keandre Lambert Smith, not in the way that O.J.'s gone, but Keandre is in the transfer portal. Malik Mega in the transfer portal. Really, that's where we're going to have to start our Penn State conversation this week, because it's big. They've lost two guys. I think that's the two guys they've lost at this point that worth talking about at a position they very badly need. First, I guess your thoughts on Lambert Smith, and here's mine just as a precursor, and I'll keep it brief. I was really surprised they gave this another shot this spring. Really, really surprised. I'm way more surprised that they had him in camp than I am that he left. You know, what's your thoughts on him? I'm very surprised they gave it another shot the way last year went. And with as obvious as they made it by bringing Julian Fleming in, that they wanted leadership in that room. And that was his job last year. Bring leadership to the room, play well. For a short time last year, he played well, but he didn't bring any leadership to the room. And I don't know that I'm going to sit here and criticize Keandre for doing that, because some people just aren't that type of person, aren't that type of leader. And it doesn't mean he's not a really good player and a good person. But I think clearly they were going in a different direction here, and Keandre is going to be gone because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I was surprised that this lasted as long as it did, I would say. He seemed like a prime candidate to enter the portal the first time around when the first window opened. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, it's probably tough to hear all sorts of discourse around, you know, Fleming coming in and finally the Penn State receiving room has a veteran and a leader and an adult, and, you know, all those things would, you know, I could understand how they would get under somebody's skin. I'm not insinuating that that's perhaps why he left, but, you know, that it just adds to the the situation that you know the calculus is being made in. Yeah, I mean, you kind of felt like the writing was on the wall when he didn't take questions after the Peach Bowl. Especially when you compare that to you know the his demeanor after the Rose Bowl. It was very very open and happy to talk, we can say. You know, it especially the way last season ended, it just seemed like, you know, he had sort of exhausted his time with the team. And I don't know. DeAndre was a very talented player, is a very talented player. But this might be a controversial take. It's hard for me to think Penn State's season is made or broken with or without Keandre, just because of how last season ended. I mean, he was kind of a ghost over the last 5 to 6 games of the year. You know, you can say if Keandre's up playing to his best, or you know he's getting the ball more, or the coaches are scheming him, you know, more opportunities. Whatever you, maybe it's a combination of all three. You know, maybe you can say the team is in a better place, but it's not like he was off the field. It's not like he was missing during that span. He just wasn't producing much. You know, receiver is a point of need for this team, certainly going forward. But I don't know that DeAndre is the number one in the room was necessarily, you know, what was going to decide if Penn State was a contender this year. They were going to have questions at receiver without him, but they were going to have questions with him too. So I mean, obviously, you don't want to lose somebody of his caliber, but you know, I don't feel as though they're going right back to square one either.
For as easy as it is for me to sit here and talk about how I'm surprised they gave this another shot when it was clearly not working last year. Especially as the season went on, and definitely the numbers after Yurcich left were, I think Lambert Smith had 2 catches over the last 4 games, but they brought him back for a reason, and the reason is he's pretty good, and they needed somebody who's pretty good in that room. And I think the next question you have to ask yourself, if you're a Penn State fan or if you're one of the coaches, is, and this question was asked more than one time at the post-game press conference to James's chagrin, how comfortable are you as a coaching staff with what you have? Because let's face it, without Keandre, you could argue, and it wouldn't even be much of an argument, Keandre was their most talented player in the room. I think it's very easy, and at the same time, it's very concerning to just say, well, they'll go and get somebody better out of the portal, when the number one ranked player in the portal right now at receiver is Keandre Lambert-Smith. I don't know that they're getting a better guy than him. Now, could they get a better fit? Yes. Could they get a more talented guy? I don't know. And I think they need talent right now. They really need to have somebody who comes in there and can break a game open. Keandre, I think, could have done that. A more mature Keandre, a more consistent Keandre, definitely could have done that. And I think that's what they were hoping for, especially if he didn't have the responsibility of being the paragon of on and off the field actions that they were expecting him to be last year. And he's just trying to be himself. He's, you know, he's said enough over the years. We've interviewed him. I think he's an honest guy. I think he's a very intelligent guy. And I think he's also very uninterested in being the type of guy that you want to, that would want a bunch of people following him and doing what he does. So I think he's an individual, and you can play with individuals if you have Julian Fleming, and they did. Now, you know, they have Julian Fleming, but they don't have the individual talent. And, you know, the question is, can they get by with what they have, or do they have to go into the portal? And I'm telling you right now, I don't think anybody they get out of the portal isn't maybe as talented as Keandre Lambert-Smith. So where does Penn State go right now in that room? I don't have a really great feel for it, but I also don't think that what they have right now is getting them anywhere. I just don't. And I wrote a column after the game that basically said, if you look at it, the share of catches, per target was better. It was really more what they could have been. And, you know, maybe a healthy Trey Wallace helps, but you know, Omari Evans doing a little more helps, but I don't know. I don't look at that group and say that they're game breakers. I don't know where we, you know, where we think Penn State's going with what they have. I mean, they could be, could they be serviceable? Yeah, maybe. Are they going to run the ball so much that it doesn't matter? Yeah, maybe. At some point, one of those guys is going to have to make a play. And who's making a play? Who's making a play against the top cornerbacks of the Big Ten in a big spot? Who's doing what Jahan Dotson used to do? Who's doing what Godwin used to do? I don't see that from this group.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Is the team better without Keandre? I don't think so. But I don't know how much better the team necessarily was going to perform anyway. I guess you should say, like, I don't know if that's too negative of a take for some people, but you know, you mentioned who in the room is going to make the play against the top Big Ten corner, and I don't know that Keandre was either. I think this problem goes deeper than even this. You know, that's not to diminish the loss of a super talented guy. You know, Keandre had games this past season where he was a number one. You know, in that Rose Bowl game, he was a number one. But as you said, with the inconsistency, I don't know that if Penn State played Ohio State right now and they had Keandre, I don't know that I would be able to comfortably say, oh yeah, Keandre will go out there and make some plays. It's just as likely to me that he would go 2 for 12 and just be quiet. Yeah, so I don't know who would make the plays in that receiver room. I know we're going to get into the spring game a little bit later. I guess a ceiling pick could be Omari Evans, but I was just talking last week about how he disappeared. Yeah. The last, you know, he's been gone. So you're really playing the projection game now when you're looking at the receiving room. Yeah, Trey Wallace is very good if he's healthy, but we haven't seen healthy Trey Wallace in a year. And when the last time he was healthy, he was not expected to be the security blanket of Drew Aller. You know, Julian Fleming has had a very long career. He's a very highly touted high school recruit that Penn State missed out on, but there's a reason he left Ohio State. You know, receivers who are game breakers typically don't leave Ohio State. That's a wide receiver factory over there. I don't think this team gets better losing Keandre, but if anybody thought that Penn State was going to win the Big Ten because of Keandre, or no longer feels like Penn State is a Big Ten contender because he left, I question where the initial expectation was coming from. That's not to say they can't be contenders, but they were never going to be contenders because of the wide receiver room, if that nuance makes any sense.
I don't think they're contenders on offense because they have any one guy they have. Like I was just thinking, like, who makes them a contender? I think it's the sum of the parts. I think it's going to have to be that way. You don't have a Marvin Harrison who's going to, in a year where you're down at every other spot at Ohio State, Marvin Harrison is carrying you. You don't have that on this team. Maybe a couple of years ago they did with Dotson, but certainly not enough around them to go undefeated or do whatever they would have had to do to get Dotson in a position to carry them to the tournament. I agree to a sense, in a sense where Keandre is not the game breaker, but Keandre is also definitely your best guy. So you do have to go on without your best guy. And you know, and the portal opens and everybody kind of, you know, I probably am guilty of it as anybody. You're retweeting every time a receiver you've heard of is in the portal. But it, you know, who's the fit? You know, how much money do they want? Is there money to give these guys? You know, everybody's in the portal for that reason. Maybe Keandre is looking for a new start, but generally speaking, these guys are in to make a little more money. And you know, who are you putting a lot of money into if you're Penn State to get them in there to make a big difference? That's where I think NIL is a little bit of an interesting thing now, because you're going to have some people going in thinking, oh, this is, I'll get money somewhere. But you're going to have teams who really need players who just aren't going to be able to do it, because what's the upshot? Where's the, you know, who would you rather give some extra money to? A guy out of the portal or Trey Wallace? Like at this point, if you have to keep a guy or you have to, you know, make him happy or whatever, I just think, and I'm going to say this, and you're probably going to disagree, and most of the listeners are probably going to disagree. I don't think they're going to go into the portal and get a guy who's going to make a difference. Maybe a difference maker is out there, but you first of all have to find them. Second of all, have to secure them. And third of all, the resources put into finding him and securing him might outweigh how much of an impact he's going to make anyway. You're always better off. And James Franklin kind of alluded to this after the game, but it's true in a sense, and it's true in other sports. It's true in baseball. It's true in basketball, where you're with the G League. You're always better off just developing a guy and being able to do it. And I think that brings up a whole lot of other questions with Penn State, because you don't see a lot of development on the field in game days. You do in the locker room, but sometimes, you know, in the big games, that doesn't really show up. I think the better way to go here is develop the guys you have. You'll kind of make Trey Wallace better, get Evans better. But, you know, even then, Sam, who's the guy who's not playing right now that can get a lot better? Mega's gone. And I look at that receiver room now, and I could see the fall coming. And for all the talk about Kotelnicki's offense and what it's doing and how it focuses on the skills players have and not doing what the system calls for, I could see it in the fall being Tyler Warren with 8 catches, Dinkins with 4, and 40 carries between Singleton and Allen. I could see it turning into that for sure. I could also see us in December saying they lost 2 or 3 games again. You know, what were they doing? So I don't know if this necessarily gets any better if they don't have someone who steps up either out of the portal or, to me, much more likely in the room right now. But I just don't know who's the guy in the room. Who is it? Liam Clifford? Is there a lot more to Liam Clifford than we're seeing? I don't know. Is there a lot more to Caden Saunders than we're seeing? I don't know. I have a lot of questions about this group, and that's after a game where I thought they played okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I don't see how much noise they can realistically make in the portal. You know, if they go get a guy, I'm imagining it will be somebody, you know, like a Malik McClain, where, you know, there's perhaps some room for development there, but, you know, you're not really expecting him to come in and be, you know, one of your top two guys right away. You know, I really think, not to harp on this because we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but I really do believe the Dante Cephas miss set this room back more than they were expecting. I think they obviously, I mean, you know, they wouldn't have brought him in if they thought it wasn't going to go well. But I really think Cephas was supposed to come in and be a Mitchell Tinsley type. You know, that was supposed to be the track that he was on, and you know, it just simply didn't pan out. I mean, he would have played another year this year, or I mean, I suppose he could have entered the draft if he had a good year last year. But you know, he had a second year of eligibility that he could have used with Penn State, and that, you know, if he plays the way that they thought they were gonna have him play, you know, that certainly makes the outlook of the room look a little bit different. You know, you brought up Liam Clifford. You know, I felt like he clearly improved coming into this past season, but again, he feels like there's a ceiling to the type of receiver he can be. Certainly a good option. You know, perhaps he settles into that third slot receiver style spot with the offense. That's not a bad spot for him, and there's certainly worse guys that could fill that spot for Penn State. But as you said, is Liam Clifford going to take over the game against Ohio State? Or, you know, I kind of find that hard to believe. Yeah, I mean, you're looking at the room, and it's mostly a mixture of unproven guys who really haven't even seen the field, or it's guys where, you know, you can talk yourself into he's going to take a big step next year, or, you know, whatever it may be, your Julian Flemings, your Amari Evanses, your Caden Saunders. But they're so deep into their career already that you kind of have to have seen it. If it's not there yet, you know, I don't think you can hang your hat on, oh, this is definitely coming. It's not to say it can't, but, you know, Julian Fleming's a senior, I think. He's, you know, you kind of know what Julian Fleming is. Amari Evans was been missing. You know, he's kind of got to prove that track that he was on as a freshman is the track that he still is on. You know, Caden Saunders, you know, was supposed to kind of be, he was supposed to be the next guy in the room, it felt like. It felt like, you know, after he spent some time behind the Parker Washingtons and the Keandre Lambert Smiths, it was, you know, rooming with Drew Aller. But again, he's a junior now, I think, and what have we seen him do? I guess he's going to be a returner this year, and it's a good spot for him. You can do some good stuff there. You know, he had a decent spring game, I guess, but I don't know. I have to see it before I'm gonna stake my claim on any of these guys, and I don't think there's any action in the portal coming. I could be wrong. If it certainly nothing substantial. It feels like Julian Fleming was the guy. That's the way they used the portal in the past, and that's, you know, it makes sense that they would go get a Fleming. But I don't know, with or without Keandre, I feel like the week by week stats were kind of going to be what you said. Tyler Warren, 8 catches, you know, Nick and Katron getting carries 2 out of 3 plays in a 3-play series. It's, you know, it's going to be what it was going to be. But if it's going to be that way, you might want to have a receiver that can pop the top off at any given point.
Should Penn State fans be worried about the development of receivers? And I bring that up because went back and looked at a lot of the recruiting. You could argue that the last receiver they developed of true consequence in a game was Dotson. And that's a lot. It's 5 years ago now, 6 years ago, whatever class he was in. And the thing is, they're not bringing guys in. You know, you would think by the sheer volume of players they're bringing in at that position, they know that receiver's important in the game today. They know it. James has said it. You know, they're the big play guys in any offense anymore. And you go back and look, 2020 recruiting class, Keandre. Look, we're going to go through 2020 recruiting class, 21, 22, 23. You're not going to find a guy who's been better than Keandre that Penn State's brought in. You Jaden Dotton, Parker. And I think, you know, Parker Washington leaving early hurt this group. And Lonnie White Jr. not coming in hurt this group. Those are two things I think that set them back, along with Cephas, who they brought in to be a 2-year guy. And for them to get really not all that much out of him was a problem for them. But you know, Mega was in that 2020 class. Norval Black was in that 2020 class. And then the next year was Trey Wallace and Liam Clifford. And there was somebody else in the 2021 class that hasn't at this point panned out the way they wanted to. Oh, no, that was White. Yeah, Lonnie White was in that class. So, yeah, and then you go to the 2022 class. These guys just aren't playing. They just aren't playing. Like what's slowing them? What's holding them back? Saunders in 2022. You know, Mekhi Flowers is a receiver now. We didn't see much of him in the game, so I guess that tells you a little bit about that. Anthony Ivey doesn't play all that much. Doesn't play at all, really. You know, Evans was in that class, converted quarterback. Tyler Johnson. You know, they're bringing guys in. Tinsley was kind of in that group. But they're bringing guys in, Sam. It's not a matter of they're not focusing on it. They want to get better there. They're not getting it. And now, is that because what they value is not successful anymore? Or is it because they're losing what they really want to the Ohio States and Michigans and Georgias and Alabamas?
You know, I tend to rag on the expectations of fans sometimes, but you know, to some degree, I agree that, you know, it would be unrealistic to say Penn State can go get a Marvin Harrison Jr. because number one, those types of players are rare, and two, they don't those types of receivers don't come to Penn State. If they're a linebacker, they come to Penn State. If they're a running back, they come to Penn State. But receivers of that caliber, you know, don't really just show up. And then, you know, when it comes to production and development, that, you know, you could claim a Dotson didn't come in as highly touted as a Harrison Jr., but they turned him into a first round pick. And that's, you know, I don't know where the responsibility falls. Like you said, it's mostly on players sometimes, but you know, something isn't working, and it's not just with missing out on the Marvin Harrisons. It's not finding the Jahan Dotsons.
Yeah, now it should be noted that Penn State got a higher ranked receiver than Harrison that year. That was the Lonnie White year, and I saw Lonnie White play baseball up close. I don't blame the man for taking taking the baseball money and for thinking that was his future. And go look up his stats this year. He's been really, really good. He made the right decision for himself, but Penn State was not helped by that. I mean, he was supposed to come in. He would have been the number one guy, I think. In their minds, that was the guy they were bringing to be number one, and he isn't. He's that guy that would compel you to get him the ball. They haven't brought in a natural game breaker. And this is probably going back. I mean, geez, you know, they brought in Justin Shorter as a five-star guy. I don't remember what year that was, and he is far from a five-star player. And Dotson was far from a three-star player the opposite way. He was a five-star player. But, you know, you look at the guys they brought in, and the guys you focus on, say, oh, they did a great job developing Godwin and Dotson. But Godwin and Dotson came in pretty good. I mean, Dotson, I thought, immediately was better than his rating. And you're right. I think we pay too much attention to the ratings. I kind of think they go to zero when you come in, and then see where you're going from there. But I look at it, to me, mostly they have gotten a bunch of guys. I don't look at the stars. I look at the number of guys they brought in, and to kind of get a decent Keandre, a pretty decent, potentially Trey Wallace, and William Clifford, who, God bless him, he does his job. William Clifford, he's the one guy in that room doing exactly what you would think he should do. But I don't think William Clifford's Randy Moss. I don't think he's going to turn into that. So, you know, really you have to find some guys around him that could stretch the field a little bit. Now, is that Omari Evans? Potentially, yeah. Is it Trey Wallace? Potentially. But we haven't seen it. And you're not going to see it until you see it, and you're not going to see it out of anybody who's in the portal, because I promise you this, Sam, anybody who is that type of player is not in the portal to go to Penn State. And we will talk more about the blue-white game in the second segment here. We'll break it down position by position and get Sam's thoughts on what was, I thought, an interesting end of spring scrimmage. Back in a second. Second half of the blue-white post-mortem, I guess, is the word we could use on this, Sam. I don't know what else to say about the blue-white game. I will say this, though. I do not like covering the blue-white game. I think everybody knows that. I've said it many times over the years. But they finally did something right this year. They gave us our parking spots. And they had everybody go in the same way they come in for actual games at Beaver Stadium in the fall, instead of everybody just coming off that one exit off of 99 and just bottlenecking there and creating an hour and a half of traffic jams and whatever. And I'll tell you what, best experience I've ever had covering the blue-white game. In and out, it was parking spot, beautiful. Everybody had a good time. Everyone was spaced out. Very, very nice job by Penn State this week. So that's my, and you've never had to, I assume, drive into a game and sit in the traffic as somebody who just kind of walked up from wherever you were living on campus.
Yeah. It was never, I would, you know, I'd wake up 2 hours or so, but well, probably earlier than that, but you know, I all it would take was a 15-minute walk up to the stadium. So that part was much easier than the away games. So I've never had the experience with the Penn State parking.
If the blue white game is going to be this easy to cover, my new least favorite game to cover is the whiteout. Because I you know, when you're driving home at 3 a.m., that's no fun. That is just absolutely no fun. But Sam, a lot of interesting things to me happen in the blue white game. And I you know, what's the number one takeaway you had? Let's not focus on the receivers. We just did a whole segment on them. But outside of the receivers, what was the one thing that really stood out to you that maybe was not as obvious on the broadcast or whatever that, you know, people are talking about?
Well, so I'll you know, qualify my statement ahead of time, but you know, I understand that, you know, that there is some truth to what James was saying after the game about it being easier to show strong defense at the spring game than perhaps it is to show strong offense at the spring game, or at least, you know, when you're bringing in a new coordinator and you have a young set of offensive players, you know, it's there's a little bit more of a mountain to climb than there is with defense. But, you know, I still had questions about aspects of the defense heading into the spring game. And I know, you know, you can't really take a ton away from the spring game. You know, I'm hesitant to make any strong statements solely because of the spring game, but I would feel pretty good about the defense. I mean, the position groups that we were wondering about had guys step up. You know, AJ Harris, correct me if I'm wrong, I think was playing on the unofficial second teamer side of the defense.
He was on the blue team.
He played like a starter. You know, he had what, 7 tackles, and it felt like 6 of them came immediately in the game. You know, I felt like he had a strong game, and he was somebody that, you know, we talked about him a little bit as a potential difference maker in the cornerback room, but he wasn't necessarily, you know, the front runner for a top position in that group. So guys emerging like that's a reassuring thing for Tom Allen, in my opinion. You know, it just, Manny was such a strong defensive coordinator. We've talked ad nauseum about him this past season, so I won't harp too much praise on a guy that's no longer sort of relevant in the Big Ten. But, you know, Manny did such a good job with that defense that, you know, it was understandable to have some concerns. How much of their success last year and the previous year was because of personnel, and how much of it was because you have maybe the best defensive coordinator in the country? You saw at the spring game, they still have a lot of strong personnel there. You know, even if, you know, and Tom Allen's no slouch. There's no shot at Tom Allen. But, you know, even if Manny is gone, they have guys on defense. It may not be as much of a step back this year as maybe some people thought.
Yeah, I don't know how they're keeping Harris off the field. He was that good, I thought, and it was a physical force. Yeah. I mean, he made a couple of plays behind the line. He's a sure tackler. Yeah, I looked up his size during the game to see, because he looked like a big player, and he's not super huge, but for a cornerback, he's a big kid. I liked him. I actually like Kimber too. I thought, you know, looking at him on that blue, and I thought that was a really smart thing for Franklin. I don't know why he put Fleming on the blue team. That was interesting, but he put the other two kids, the other two big transfers in, Kimber and AJ Harris, against the quote unquote presumed number one group of receivers. And I thought they held their own pretty well. And yeah, you know, they should hold their own against those receivers. But you know, I thought that Harris showed a lot. You could see why he was a guy Georgia wanted and was a 5-star recruit. And you know, I think there was a lot of questions last week about the cornerbacks because we haven't seen most of them. And now I have a different sort of set of questions because I don't know what it's going to line up with on opening day. Where does Tom Allen go? Because I can't picture. Now, you can tell a lot sometimes by what they say about kids and what, you know, one of the award winners, I forget which award it was, but But Cam Miller won one of the leadership awards that they give out for spring practice. And I can't see a scenario where Cam Miller is not going to be one of the starters in the fall. So where does Kimber fall in there? And where does AJ Harris fall? Especially when you have Tracy and Washington and a couple other guys who look pretty good too. There's just not, that's one position where there's really not a rotation. You rotate because you want to, or because you need to, or whatever. You feel you have to, but you don't really have to. You could leave the two or three guys out there all the time. And I think to a degree, Penn State did that a little bit last year. They worked in Cam Miller, but it was mostly Dixon and King and Daquan Hardy. This year, I don't know how you keep everybody happy, you know, just kind of keeping two or three guys out there and working in a fourth guy. I think they're going to have to come up with some creative ways to get a lot of playing time for these guys, especially in this day and age. And, you know, there wasn't anybody who I saw at cornerback on Saturday that to me wasn't as good as I was anticipating. I think they're all kind of better than I thought there would be. And what did you think about the ends? I heard something last week that was interesting, and I'll bring it up, but it was, I had heard that Abdul Carter, after his transition from linebacker to defensive end, wasn't as crisp during the spring as the guys who have been at defensive end. And I don't know if it's fair to compare him to deny Dennis Sutton or Zariah Fisher or, you know, any of those guys who were Vanover or any of those guys who are coming back to, even Smith Vilbert, who's I heard had a really good camp, really, really good camp. But Carter, to me, I thought he looked really good at defensive end. I don't think there's any doubt that that's where he's going to be in the fall. But I think there are some interesting questions to be asked about Carter. What did you think watching him? Did you focus it on him at all? I thought his first step was outstanding in this game. And granted, he's playing a lot against some backup tackles and some freshmen who had no chance against him and who did their best, but had no real shot. But I thought he looked to me among the defensive ends like he could be the most explosive of them.
Well, and you mentioned that he was going up against, you know, second teamers and stuff like that. But
and Boyer, poor kid.
But there were some aspects of what Abdul did in the game that, or the practice, whatever you want to call it, that, on this past weekend, that I don't think were related to, you know, the guys he was going up against. You talk about a first step. That's not really how, you know, there's some gamesmanship and stuff that goes on when you're facing off with the offensive line, certainly. But, you know, there's also just aspects to Abdul that are because of his individual prowess.
Yeah.
There are some things that he does that he's going to do them against a first teamer. He's going to do them against a second teamer. He'd do them against me. It doesn't matter. You know, he's a talented guy. And I wish I had written it down, but there was a specific play where I think they blew it dead before he could get there. But, you know, Abdul just, I mean, the second the ball was snapped, he was back with the running backs. And, you know, you can qualify that however you want. You can say he was going up against, you know, non-starters. You can say that it was a spring game and, you know, the stakes were lower. You could say, you know, he wasn't going against Drew Aller, so it wasn't a starting quarterback. Regardless, not every defensive end on that team is going to be able to move with the speed that he does or the power that he does, or frankly, generate the amount of game planning that he's going to generate from opposing teams. He's that dynamic of a player that even if he's a little bit behind the defensive ends in terms of development, which he may be, I don't know. You know, when you talk about fundamentals or whatever, if Abdul's on the field, he's going to make an impact. I don't see a way that, you know, even if you put his hand in the dirt and he's now playing end, or you know, stand him back up and he's playing as a linebacker in the box, regardless, you know, quarterbacks are going to want to look for number 11 and they're going to want to avoid ending up in the hands of 11 as well.
Abdul Carter does a lot of things better than anybody on the field. Well, and that first step to me, I mean, that's what Chop Robinson did well. Nobody can get a hand on him, and he played against the, you know, some of the better tackles in the Big Ten. And I don't think anybody's getting a hand on Carter if he gets a good enough jump. I was surprised they didn't whistle him a couple times during the game and then went back and rewatched it, and he was not offside. That's why the whistle didn't come. So he's that good, but he's just not a traditional defensive end. He's an edge. And I think there's a difference between what Danai Dennis-Sutton plays and what Abdul Carter's going to play. But my question here, Sam, and I think this is a really big question for Carter this year. If he's going to play the edge, he's going to rotate. Dennis Sutton's going to be out there. Zariah Fisher is going to be out there. Smith Vilbert, if he hangs around, he's going to be out there. You know, Vanover is certainly a playable guy. You know, he makes a big impact in a few snaps, and I think his snap total is going to go up. And they have other guys on the field who are pretty good rushers off that edge. Do you want Abdul Carter as a kind of rotational guy? Or do you want him as a linebacker who's on the field all the time? Some of his answers Saturday kind of led me to believe he's planning on maybe being a little bit of both, kind of a hybrid guy. He'll be the edge rusher sometimes, and he'll be on the field certain moments as a linebacker. I think it's going to be a big challenge for Tom Allen, because the way they've played in the past, that's a guy who's on the bench sometimes. And I don't think you could play defense with Abdul Carter on the bench and call that your best 11. I don't think there's any kind of scenario where if you listen to Tom Allen saying, I want my best 11 at any one moment in the field, and then say, well, my defensive ends here, Danai Dennis-Sutton and Zariah Fisher. I could make a really good argument and real passionate argument from what I saw in the blue-white game that I would rather have Carter on the field than Dennis-Sutton. And that's saying because Dennis-Sutton's good.
Well, I mean, I would be interested to see if they're going to do something. You know, I hate making these comparisons because I think that they're a little overblown and, you know, they're perhaps just unfair, but they're also cliche, you know, but whatever. Abdul, I'm interested to see if they do a Micah style rotation with him where, you know, he's not necessarily being rotated off the field, but perhaps he's being rotated in terms of what his responsibilities are.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can do that with a college player. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. I don't know. But I'm with you. I think that if you're having your best 11 out there and you want to rotate in a defensive look where it's Amin Vanover and Danai Dennis-Sutton on the edges, Abdul's still got to be out there in some capacity. And I think you got to stand him up and move him back a little bit as a linebacker. I don't know if they'll do that, but you know, he's certainly talented enough and he creates enough chaos that, you know, how could you not want him on the field if you're a defensive coordinator? I mean, I know that there's a lot of talented guys in that front seven. Don't get me wrong. You know, Abdul's going to go in the first round next year, and that's just the reality of the situation. And you want to use guys like that to the best of their ability while they're here. You know, I know not every player can play every snap, and not just because of keeping guys happy. You know, it's just that's not how football works. But you know, you want to limit the amount of times. I mean, think about hypothetically what. When is the right time to take Abdul off the field? It's not first down because you want to set the tone on first down. It's not second down because you don't want to lose the ground you gave up. It's not third down because that's the most, you know, that's the key scenario for the defense. And it's obviously not fourth down because, you know, you want to make the stop. You want to get off the field. So I'm interested to see how they handle him because, you know, especially with the position change, it throws a whole new wrinkle into this whole thing.
Yeah, you can't have him off the field because he wants to make some money in the draft. It's not smart. It's not good coaching. It just isn't. It's being a nice guy. It's looking out for the kid maybe, but it's just not smart for your program to do it that way. And I know Tony Rojas is a good player. He looked okay on Saturday, and you know Kobe King is very solid, but they're not Abdul at this. Neither of them are Abdul, and at this point in their careers, and probably won't ever be. And we mentioned that last week. But you know, if you're breaking down your best 11, quote unquote, on defense, who are those guys? I mean, up front, Devon Elise has to be on the field. Dennis Sutton has to be on the field. Kobe King has to be on the field. Abdul has to be on the field. Four of those 11 better be defensive backs because you need them. You can't just put all your linebackers out there. So whichever two cornerbacks you're looking at, and then KJ Winston and Jalen Reed. So those guys have to be on the field more often than not. And if you're running this really great rotation at defensive end or edge or whatever you're calling it, you know, Abdul's not in that rotation every play. He just isn't. That's why they call it a rotation. You're not rotating three guys, four guys intermittently. You're rotating them consistently. That's the point of it. So yeah, I don't know that to me that, you know, when I heard last week that, and I'm sure it's true that he's a little behind the other guys. And he admitted it is, you know, he might be from a total defensive end, like perspective, he might be a little behind what the others could do. But when I heard that, I thought, I wonder if the coaches are thrilled about that. Like personally, I mean, why wouldn't they be? You know, you could play your traditional 4-3. I don't know if they're going to do that. They didn't show that at the beginning of the game last week, but you know, to say we need one less linebacker on the field so Zakii Wheatley could play. I don't know. I don't know if that's the best way to go about that. Was there a player in this game that stood out to you that you hadn't seen before that you thought, wow, that guy's going to make an impact? I have one or two. I'm interested to see if you have one of those two guys on your
list. Well, certainly AJ Harris was one of them. He wasn't on my radar going in. Well, I shouldn't say not on my radar, but you know, he wasn't somebody that I necessarily expected to play like a starter. You know, you brought up Cam Miller. You know, we've been hearing about Cam Miller since it feels like the second he stepped on campus. So it wasn't surprising necessarily to see Cam play well. But, you know, I know I just talked a long time about AJ Harris and everything, but for me, it showed that it was strong. That's what you want to see from a transfer from Georgia. It shows that they're not as much as the receivers have given them trouble, especially in the portal. You know, their eye for talent is still there.
I don't know where this guy is getting on the field in limited snaps. I mean, outside of I'm talking meaningful snaps here at the end of games, we'll get on, but Dakari Nelson looks awesome to me.
Yeah.
That kid had a big impact early in that game. And I looked up like, who is that kid? Who's that linebacker? Who's number eight? And I looked up, it was Nelson. He is a monster. That is a big safety. And he brought some hits in that game. And I thought he really stood out to me as a guy who I think could make an impact down the road. But the two guys ahead of him, three guys ahead of him, really, because Wheatley, I think Wheatley did play okay in the game. He had the interception on the ball that Bo kindly threw to him. But yeah, Nelson's an intriguing guy. He's a guy that you could play at that lion position too. And I think it won't. I think he could be a three down lion guy. I think he's that potentially good. But he's a guy that stood out. And the other guy, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Quentin Martin yet.
Yeah.
Because Quentin Martin came in and we had three carries and scored on two of them. And he looks really dynamic. And James kind of poo-pooed it at the end of the game because, you know, we haven't seen him a whole lot. He battled some injuries and availability is the best ability and all that. And I get it, but Martin looked really good. But to me, and I think the other guy who stood out, and it's not Martin, but Cam Wallace, I kind of like Cam Wallace. There's something to him. He's, you know, he's definitely a big enough guy. He's smaller in height, but definitely a guy who's going to get tough yards for them. I think, I thought he ran hard. I don't think he missed assignments on the plays. I think he was a willing blocker, and they need a third back. Now, whether that's going to be Martin, he might force his way into that conversation. But I really thought, just as a guy who's going to do the right things, and you're going to put him in there and he's not going to do something crazy that's going to hurt you, that third running back spot. Yeah, I was really interested in that coming into the game. And I think Cam Wallace, to me, won it in that game. I think he won it in the spring. I think the coaches knew he had won it in the spring and won it in camp, but he backed it up, I thought, in the game. I thought he was really, really good. In that kind of tiny battle there between him and Martin, and maybe London Montgomery, if you put London in there, but the two guys they were talking about in the spring were Wallace and Quentin Martin. And I thought Wallace did nothing to hurt him. I thought he was actually he actually looks to me like a useful player.
Yeah, I thought, you know, really all three of the running backs I know that they played more of them, but really the between Wallace, Martin, and Montgomery, you know, I felt as though all of them really put good stuff on film. Perhaps Montgomery to a lesser extent than Martin and Wallace. Yeah, there was some flash there. It's the first time in a long time, it feels, that the third running back spot is a young guy's spot.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to go back and think about it, but it feels like for the recent past, the third string guy has been, you know, a Devin Ford caliber player, or, you know, a Trey Potts even last season. It's now that Nick and Catron are real veterans of the room, which for some reason feels weird to say, but maybe it's just because I'm so used to them being freshmen and then sophomores. It feels like, you know, they have played since first stepping on campus. So, you know, maybe they should feel like veterans, but, you know, it's now a young guy's role to be the change of pace in the backfield. And yeah, I'm with you. I thought, although Martin had the two touchdowns, I felt like Wallace was the stronger player. He had a blitz pickup against, I think it was Kavion Keys.
Yeah.
That Keys came on a blitz up the middle, and Wallace stepped up and just took the whole hit.
Yeah.
And redirected all of the momentum. And, you know, we talked about the importance of pass protection when it comes to how they evaluate running backs, especially the third running back, because, you know, it feels like they go out there maybe in pass situations or whatever it may be. And to me, Wallace was a step ahead of the other guys in terms of pass protection. You know, I just thought he had the better game than Martin and Montgomery. It doesn't mean that those two don't have juice. It doesn't mean that they can't continue. They're both young. All three of them are young. But, you know, I thought Wallace was pretty clearly the in the lead of that race, if he has not just outright won it.
Yeah, I think he's the guy right now. I don't think, and in fact, I think he's so solid that they don't need to get a guy out of the portal. I mean, I don't see I don't see them pursuing running back here and thinking that's something we need. And I think that's a big deal, because we just mentioned both of these coordinators, both of the new guys, want to get your best 11 on the field. Well, there's no planet where two of your best 11 guys on offense aren't Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. So you're kind of looking at those two guys being on the field together a little more this year, maybe a lot more this year than they had in the past, which does kind of open you up to some injuries. And they've been lucky that those two guys haven't really gotten banged up and haven't lost them for a ton of time. But I would imagine they're going to be in the line of fire even more this year in that regard than they have in the past. So I want to ask you this question. I want to see if you come close on this one. I'm not sure I would have. I don't know. I looked it up. How many carries did Trey Potts have last year?
Oh, goodness. let's see. Was it like 60, 70?
Oh, it's 25.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was afraid I was going to go
yeah,
even too low.
Yeah, I thought you might go too low and try to, because you ask those questions and somebody's like, oh, it's got to be lower than I think we wouldn't be asking. So I thought you might go 30, but the answer's 25. He didn't have many carries last year. But I would almost guarantee you, the way they want to play offense, that Cam Wallace or whoever that third running back is going to be, is going to have more than 25 carries. That's what it would have to be.
I would think so.
Because I would think they're going to flank Nick out a little bit more. Let you know, if they're going to play two running backs, and that's been a staple in the Kotelnicki offenses, they're going to need the third guy. He's got to be good. He's got to be a guy you can trust out there. And, you know, not that they, I think he's imminently more trustable right now than Martin, Now, Martin might be a better player, and Martin probably is a better player, but definitely a more explosive player. But Cam Wallace is a more trustworthy player. And I kind of, you know, I don't know if you'll remember him, but he reminds me of Mark Allen. Remember Mark Allen? It was a really good, solid running. You don't remember Mark Allen, do you? You do
no.
not remember. Oh, my God. Mark.
I was
Mark
smile
played
and
the,
nod.
Yeah. He was, but same kind of idea, smaller guy, but very serviceable. And when they put him in, he did a decent job. And I'm not talking about a Tank Smith decent job. They put Mark, and I'm not knocking Tank Smith. Please don't email me. Email Sam if you're upset. S. Freeman at ScrantonTimes.com. Yeah, I when they put Mark Allen in the game in meaningful spots, he did okay. He was all around pretty good. And I can't remember who he played with. But I'll look that up. But kind of reminds me of what Cam Wallace is now. Kind of the same idea. But I think that's a position that's going to have to play a lot more, especially if you're really putting your 11 best guys on the field. So it's important. He played in 2018, Sam. Senior in 2018, Mark Allen. I can't – how soon we forget the great ones. But, yeah, I just think that's a real sneaky spot to need a really good player at. And maybe by midseason it's Martin, but I think they're going to open the season with Wallace there. What'd you make of the London Montgomery game? While we're in Scranton, I guess we have to talk about Montgomery. I thought that was really crazy interesting what he did in that game. He had 5 carries for 8 yards and he had an 11 yard carry. And you could argue the 11 yard carry was the best carry in the game.
Yeah.
So what do you make of him? I mean, a lot's been made of his size. You know where we're at with that. You know, get bigger or you're not going to play. And that's what they're going to tell him. But what did you think of him in that game? Because you kind of saw for one brief shining moment what got him where he is.
Yeah.
And whether it was size or whatever, I think there's potential there. If he could really hit the weight room and put weight on and work and show the staff that this is important to him and that he wants to be a contributor and can do this, I think there's a future for the guy. I mean, he's got a lot of speed. He's got a lot of side to side movement. He is an exciting player. We saw it in high school in a league that didn't even want to tackle him. Let's face it. This league was not going to get him to the level he can be, but Penn State can. And I would like to see what he can do if he takes that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him in our virtual office the other day. Well, on the day of the blue-white game. That cut he made on the long carry inside, I think they were inside their own 5.
They were at their 2.
They were backed up. And, you know, I think he juked. Was it Cam Miller?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a probable starter on the defense. And you saw it, the misdirection, the immediate speed that he hit after that. You know, I said to the guys the other day, you know, I almost look at London as a true freshman right now. I know he's a redshirt freshman, but you know, in terms of his development, you know, ACLs are hard on any athlete, but I think in particular running backs have a longer road to maybe recovery from an injury like that. Just because the nature of the position, your position is to be nimble and be fast and be durable. And, you know, the ACL is not an easy injury to overcome. I mean, you know, you remember how, I don't remember if it was an ACL with him or not, but you remember how consistent Noah Cain was. He goes down and then, you know, he was pretty much a non-factor. I mean, he was at LSU and, you know, it has never been the same since getting injured. And it's a real risk for athletes. It's a real possibility. And so, you know, I kind of throw out last season in terms of development, because you just got to focus on getting yourself right. And I know we didn't see him a ton in the blue-white game, which maybe indicates his position or in the hierarchy of that room. But you're right. He showed why he's there. And he showed why I think they're willing to play the long game with him. I mean, if you have that's the unique strength of having a room headed by both Nick and Katron. because you can now afford to take longer and focus on development with sort of the fourth and fifth team running backs. We talk about the receivers. All of those guys need to step up. It doesn't matter how old they are. You know, they need you now. They don't need you in three. Well, they will need you in 3 years as well. But most importantly is, what can you do for us right now? It's not the situation in the running back room. And, you know, as you said, size has been comparatively an issue for London compared to the other running backs he's competing with. But if you have time, that's, you know, you can't put on 20 pounds in a week. You can over the course of a season. You know, he's got a longer runway than maybe people think he does.
The problem for London, though, is he's not a true freshman. And
yeah,
you could put on 20 pounds in a year. He didn't. And when you hear Jaywan Sider last year bring it up, and you hear James this year bring it up, he's not big enough. That's the reputation you have. So to a degree, right, you said, you know, you're going to need some of these guys in 3 years, but with the receivers, they need you now. There are certain guys who it doesn't matter. 3 years doesn't matter. Now matters. And I wonder if London is, I think he might be one of them. You know, they're bringing in, there's another running back. Corey Smith is coming in the summer from Wisconsin. He didn't enroll yet. Martin is the top recruit in the state from last year by some measures. You have Nick and Catron, who are going to absorb a lot of the carries this year. But you also have Cam Wallace, who's taking a big step ahead of you. So I think this is an important year for London. I think he's got to show that he can get bigger and stronger, and he's willing to put that time in the weight room and do it or eat right or whatever he's not doing that needs to be done. Or if there's, I don't know. I guess we don't know. Maybe he's eating cheesecakes all day and not putting on weight. Some people are blessed with that ability, but who knows what's really happening here. But you know, the way they talk about it, you know what they think, you know what, you know, they want to know why this isn't happening. And there's no other guys are putting the weight on. Why aren't you? And I think that the one thing you can do if you're London, I mean, and this is a game where you watch it. He got tackled for a 4 yard loss by Carter, and is lucky he probably survived that. And Tony Rojas ran right through him on his first carry. I mean, it was a devastating hit behind the line. You know, if there's, he's not getting by these guys all the time, but when he gets in the open field, look out. I mean, he's a big game, you know, big game guy. He could get you a splash play every now and then. So I think there is a definite future for him with Penn State, but I think in the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, he's got to show he can get bigger. He's got to show he can hit the weight room and be that kind of guy. So I think they're trying to challenge him. And I think the blue white game, number one, showed him why he needs to get bigger and stronger. But I think it also showed Penn State why he's worth that, because that one carry, it was like, oh wow, that's what he was against, you know, the likes of Dunmore and Scranton High. That's what he was. Nobody's touching this kid. And I think it's not speed. It's not the knee anymore. It's not the skills. It's the size holding him back. And I think I think he's worth that time. I think that's what he showed. Now, whether he'll get that time in a crowded room, who knows? But I think he showed that he's potentially worth it. Sam, thanks so much for recapping the spectacle that is Blue-White Game with me this week.
Absolutely.
For Sam, this is Donnie Collins. We will talk again next week. We'll do some draft stuff next week, Sam. Be prepared. We'll be Kuiper and Field Yates next week. And we'll talk again soon.